Good morning. How are you all this morning? I'm Scott Tenona, member here, and it's a beautiful morning. I'm happy to see you all. We're talking about risk today. You just watched a montage of some risky behavior. And you are here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, where we welcome people of all faiths and practices. We support each other in our journeys and in our ethical deliberations, and we work for progressive action. We ask that you just come here open to other people and ready to listen to other people and to love them. I'm going to ask, too, if you don't mind, if you're in the back and you're willing to kind of scoot yourself up to and snuggle in, and let's all be a little bit more friendly here. It's easier. Oh, it's not too bad right now with some of the chairs back there, but it is far easier for people coming in if there's more seats in the back that are open. So if you're willing to do that, that's great. Excellent. Thank you so much. Good participators here. All right. And if you're newish here and you're curious about what Unitarian Universalism is about, I encourage you to talk with just people after the service, where we'll be hanging out in the narthex or back in the ALSEP room for coffee. Talk to me, talk to our minister, anybody else you want. Before we begin, I just draw your attention to the announcements that are in this order of service, right down here mostly, and I don't think we have anything else to bring up for you this morning. So we are just going to jump into our chalice lighting. So we've got the Skelton family here to light our chalice for us, so they can come on up. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To weep is to risk being called sentimental. To reach out to another is to risk involvement. To expose feelings is to risk exposing your true self. To place your ideas, your dreams in front of a crowd, thank you, is to risk being called naive. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To live is to risk dying. To hope is to risk despair, and to try is to risk failure. But risks must be taken, because the greatest risk in life is doing nothing. The person who risks nothing does nothing, has nothing, and becomes nothing. He may avoid suffering and sorrow, but he simply cannot learn, feel, change, grow, love, and live. Chained by his certitudes, he is a slave and has forfeited freedom. Only the person who risks is truly free. I ask you to stand as you're able. Join me in singing hymn number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Our theme for the month is risk. Risk is an interesting concept, as we take small risks every day. Some risks are small, but we really worry about them. And others, such as driving the car, are actually a little bit larger, not so small, but we take them without even thinking about them. And some things we don't even think of as being risky, but they are. We all have different attitudes towards risk. Discussion of risk is particularly important today when a country, I think, when a country faces many challenges to democracy, freedom, perhaps stability even. But many of us, and many in the media, want normalcy so much that we may pretend it's there even when it's not. So today, part of what we'll be doing is starting a discussion about the emotional and spiritual aspects of risk, taking risks, our responsibilities to ourselves, our community, and to the wider world. We're going to ask whether we're being radical enough in the face of the current climate. Whether we're being radical enough as a congregation facing the challenges we face. Whether we're being radical enough as individuals. We need to ask ourselves what we're afraid of. What we need to do to take care of ourselves. But also, what might be holding us back from entering into what really could be a wonderful aspect of our new lives. And this is an important questions to ask here. You know, seriously, what are we afraid of?
I'm afraid of being laughed at.
Oh. I'm sorry. I meant that rhetorically. So we should move on. As a congregation, what's the worst that could happen if we did things differently?
We could lose members.
We could lose members. We could. We could go bankrupt. So things could happen. Yeah, they could happen. You're right. But there's risk in not doing anything at all, too, isn't there? Right? I mean, if we keep on doing the same thing when the world is changing, I mean, think about that in our country right now. If we don't do anything differently, I mean, what's going to happen to us?
You know? We could lose our basic human rights.
And what about immigrant camps? Extinction.
Looks like we're all just
going to
die.
We're all
going to
die.
I could become an expat at 72.
You could become an expat at 72. There are a lot of dangers out there. All right, I was going to do more. I think it's time for us just to be done. All right, let's just move on to joys and concerns. But small ones. I don't want, we're all going to die. So. But it is true that being part of a community, right, we share our concerns, we share our joys, we share our fears. So if you have any concerns or joys in your life that you'd like to share, please wait for the mic and share them with the congregation.
Gene Severs, my joy is that it's been a while, but I'll be taking pottery to Lincoln, Kansas Wednesday for a show with Judy Love and Tom Leopold.
I have a joy. I spent my first sleepover at my friend's with diabetes, and I kept really good levels.
Jane Pelletier. I would like to thank, I think it's the Sunday Services Committee that did our resetting of the seating. I think it's quite a joyful thing. Thank you, Sunday Services Committee.
I started taking piano classes from Renee.
This is a joy, but also, of course, a concern. Not so much a concern that I can do anything about, but just a concern. An acquaintance of mine is beginning the downward slope into dementia. And I saw him recently with his wife, and I was initially not sure. Should I say anything to him? Should I greet him? Or will that just be something that he doesn't know how to cope with? And I decided, well, I'm going to. And so I went up, shook his hand. I do not know if he recognized me, but he clearly seemed to enjoy the interaction. And so I'm awfully glad I did. I feel like I learned something. Not entirely sure what, but I learned something.
Okay, I'm not going to talk about my son's accomplishments. He doesn't want me to say that. But I am going to say, since the theme is risk today, that I'm very proud of him for putting himself out there in recent competitions, and we won't talk about his accolades.
Hello, Emily Fraser here. I have a joy, which is that I have officially received my acceptance letter into the drama therapy program starting in the fall, so I'm just very happy about that. And I haven't given an update in quite a long time about the family that I mentioned a while back, where at that time the mother and kids were in hiding from the father. It's a long, drawn-out legal process, and it's taking its time. The kids are fine. They're sharing custody at the moment. And your thoughts and even some of you provided some other financial support and stuff were greatly, greatly appreciated. And the mother really wanted me to make sure that you all knew how much she appreciated your support. So...
My name is Piper, and I'm glad my grandma's in town.
For all those joys and concerns, both expressed or not, and we hold you in our hearts. And now, the anthem. takes a village. It is children's story, story for all ages of time, but young people are not to come up here. Young people should all have a little list of questions, and if you do not have one yet, we'll find you one. Your task for the morning as a youth of the fellowship is to find an older person of the fellowship, any sort of adult, not in your family. You are to go talk to somebody else and ask them those questions. Have a little bit of conversation. So if young folk find an adult, ask them the questions on their list. And for everybody else who doesn't get spoken to, I'll tell you what they're talking about. But go, be off, go talk to somebody.
I'm
scared. Nicely done. Oh, great. I'll talk to you. So what they're all going to talk about is what you were scared of when you were their age, and if there's anything you didn't do because you were scared. All right, I'm going to ask that we all come together again here. So let me ask, if I might, is there any adult who's willing to share what they just talked about a little bit? Any adult willing to share what they just told their new young friends? About what you were scared of. I've got a no. Oh, no.
Oh,
you could.
You're bailing on.
No.
Excuse me.
The first question I was asked was at the age of 13, what was I afraid of?
And being a farm kid, the only thing I was afraid of was rattlesnakes and copperheads. Because they were around, and when you were throwing hay bales and having to be out in the fields, they were always present. And so I was, that would be the only thing I was afraid of.
Anyone else willing to share what they just told their young friend? Here we go. Renee is over here.
Let me get this.
Glenna.
And Renee after.
Well, this is also representative of large numbers of females. I was scared of dogs. I grew up in a big city where I didn't have much friendly contact with dogs, so I always wondered if I went by one, is that one that might bite me? Mm-hmm. You know, has he done anything to the mailman lately, mm-hmm. for example? I loved cats. My mother did not, neither of my parents was enthusiastic about getting me a cat, but my mother liked Siamese cats because she said they were the most dog-like of cats.
There's no such thing.
We got one at... What was that?
There's no such thing as a dog like cat. Sorry.
Well, yes, there is, and this is it. Because, for example, it would retrieve things, and it liked to race my father into the living room between his feet so he'd come in hanging on the woodwork.
That's funny. All right, and then Renee over here.
We both learned that we accidentally had bugs in our mouth at some point in our lives.
Bugs. All right. Thank you all for sharing. I think the young people can go off to their classes now.
Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go too. Learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do. Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go too. Learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do.
Good morning. I'm Chris Bailey, and I'm on the board, and I was asked to give a testimonial as a part of our early start to the pledge drive this year. Now, we are today starting to seek pledges for the fiscal year 2017 and 18. And that starts in June, and we're trying to do this a little early so that we can see where we are when June comes around, because as you also know, we're basically in the midpoint of our developmental ministry, and so we're trying to plan ahead here. Now, I'm a gifted procrastinator, so being involved in this process now has provided me with a bracing incentive to think about what I get from all of you, from Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. And I'm not here by accident or out of habit. I was perfectly happy sleeping in on Sunday mornings for the majority of my life. But the time came when I needed this fellowship. Precisely what I needed it for is hard to define. It's one of those things that would be more detectable in its absence than in its presence. So I can say along that line of thought that UUFM for me expresses and contemplates real social human issues and interests that are important to me. Sometimes it expresses and contemplates them to a fault, but better too much than none at all. There's the fact that I can contribute, but I'm not expected to be in control. I really appreciate that. Only to trust that everything here will work out. And so far, it always has. I'm not a deeply religious person, but that's where my faith lies. I have faith that this group of people will be okay and that things will work out for us. When I joined, I realized that it would only work for me if I assigned everyone here the same place in my mind and in my feelings as that of my extended family. So you all are my extended family up here and in here. I just don't know some of you as well as I would like to. And there are members of my extended family who I haven't seen in 25 years. So, you know, frankly, I probably know you better than some of them. But that's what makes this, for me, a safe place to practice being the person that I want to be and the person that I try to be every place else. So while we are an institution, this feels like my institution. This is my corner of the greater community, my extended family, and I badly want to see it prosper and grow and continue. So when I made my first pledge ever, I had never been a church member before. I'd never been called upon to pledge before. I was relieved when the pledge form asked first what I was already doing and what I could do. That's useful information for the fellowship in any instance. And what I could do was easy because at that point in time, I was already somewhat involved. And so filling out the form itself was a surprisingly painful, painless. It really was a painless experience, but it was also a surprisingly useful exercise for me. What I put down, even the money part, now really feels like a benefit to me, at least as much, if not more, than a contribution or something that I'm doing for anybody else. And I'm very happy to do it. So I hope the process can be as useful and beneficial and painless for everybody else as it was for me. This year, our goal is to simply increase the total number of pledges that we get. So with that being said, it's time for the offertory. Mr. Meals. Thank you.
Some of you have noticed that you're going to need your hymn books. 396. What are you not risking right now? Are you not taking risks because of what you fear? Would things be as bad as you imagine? I invite you to follow along and answer to yourself what it would feel like to be in the following situations. You have retired, but do not have enough saved to sustain your lifestyle. Would you still be okay? You have lost your job and are unable to get the same sort of position. Would you still be okay? You have lost connection with your family because of a position you took or a belief you shared. Would you still be okay?
This rose will bloom.
And now consider this fellowship. Are there things we fear that are holding us back? Or concern about the vague possibilities of change that might make us less willing to take risk? I invite you to answer to yourself what it would be like for the fellowship in the following situations. We have no minister. Would we be okay? We tried for a full-time minister, but are back to a part-time minister and now have little endowment because of the attempt. Would we be okay? We have become a more spiritual, theistic, and faith-driven community. Would we be okay? We are now located downtown. Would we be okay? We have changed and decided to stop Sunday services and focus on vital midweek activities. Would we be okay? We have changed and meet only outside of church for social action, small groups, meditation, and charity events. Would we be okay? We have gone all online. Would we be okay? And now let's consider the country as a whole. Let's not.
Start by going back to some words that we heard at the beginning of the service when the chalice was lit. And I'm going to ask you to open your hymnals back up to number 658 at the back. And this is a responsive reading with part of the words that Scott used this morning for the chalice lighting. So I'll invite you to read the italic part. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool.
To weep is to risk appearing sentimental.
To reach out for another is to risk exposing our true self.
To place our ideas, our dreams, before the crowd is to risk loss.
To love is to risk not being loved in return.
To hope is to risk despair.
To try is to risk failure.
To live is to risk dying.
When I first saw those words, they struck really deeply into me. And I think part of the reason that they struck so deeply is that I had been really fighting fears as a child. And we talked earlier about our fears as children. I was afraid of dogs. I was afraid of the dark. I was afraid of heights. I was afraid of snakes. I was afraid of yelling. I was afraid of a lot of things. And I found that the only way I could really deal was to just push through those fears and do something. So I had friends who loved to climb high up in trees. And so I climbed behind them as far as I was willing to go. And then I'd push myself a little bit further up into the tree because I felt like I really needed to push through that fear to conquer it. So when I saw this reading on risk, I thought, yes, that's my life. That really speaks to me. So it speaks to some different kinds of risks. It speaks to those social risks. What if I embarrass myself? What if I look like a fool to people? What if they judge me for what I'm doing or what I'm thinking? It talks about emotional risk. What if the love I feel isn't requited? Or what if I'm deeply disappointed? What will happen? And then it also speaks to something I'd call the ontological. What if I fail? What if I die? What if I die? Because we're all going to die. We're all going to die. So that fear is somewhat real in a way, isn't it? The German theologian Paul Tillich wrote a book long ago, The Courage to Be. And he talked about courage as life's affirmation of itself, even in the bad circumstances of life. So despite all the things that come up, life can move ahead and affirm itself. We affirm ourselves as we move ahead despite the circumstances. He talked about anxiety as being the biggest thing to work against that kind of courage. And anxiety, he really saw as that that the being, when you look out and see the possibility of your own not being. So you see the possibility that you might not be, and that's what anxiety is. He actually contrasted that with fear, saying fear is of something specific. So fear of the dog or of the heights or of, you know, those things he said you can work through, you can face and get past that. But that fear of losing yourself, of not being anymore, how do you deal with a fear like that? And he talked about three kinds of anxiety, one of them being that actual fear of not being, the other, the second one being a spiritual fear, a fear of emptiness, a fear of not having any meaning in our lives. And the third one he talked about was a fear of guilt and condemnation, a moral fear. And all of those have some very strong reality to them. That idea of not being, well, we need that fear. We need that fear of not being so that we don't jump off the third floor balcony or play Russian roulette. But if that fear gets to us in a way where we won't even go out onto the balcony or we won't play sports, then that's too great a fear. If that spiritual fear of not having meaning in our lives, if that helps motivate us to go forward and get a degree in social work or in medicine and do good for the world, then that's helpful. But if that fear pushes us into a way of hiding from our meaninglessness through drugs and alcohol or gambling or one relationship after another, then that's not helpful to us. If the moral fear pushes us to try to be a better person, then that's one thing. But if it pushes us to conform to the people around us so that we're not breaking mores, then maybe that's going too far with it. So all of these things are things that we need these fears, but if we have them to too great an extent, we're in trouble. Life is risk. Getting up in the morning out of bed is a risk. We can't avoid risk in life. It's part of it. But I have seen people so constrained by their fears that they won't challenge where they are, the status quo. Because the problem with being in the position that we're in is that we really very often do not see the risk of the status quo. We don't see the risk of continuing as we are. Now, our doctors tell us that when we go in and get our cholesterol checked and they say you need to be eating better and you need to be exercising more, but those risks don't feel very real, even though they're very real. And Scott mentioned something earlier about the greatest risk. What's the greatest risk we take every day? Driving a car. Every day that we get in that car, do you know that there's a 1 in 5,000 chance that you're going to die in a car wreck? 1 in 5,000 chance. Of course, it's higher if you're male. It's higher if you're male between 21 and 25 or over 85. You know, and there are other kinds of circumstances that make it higher or lower, but that's a very real risk. On the other hand, dying in a plane wreck, you know what the chance of that is? 1 in 11 million. And so there were people after 9/11 who decided they wouldn't fly anymore. They'd drive. They were increasing their risk of dying because they couldn't see the risks realistically. They couldn't evaluate those risks. You know, and speaking of 9/11, of course, terrorism is another one. We have trouble kind of evaluating the risk of terrorism. You are as likely to die in a terrorist attack as you are to die because furniture falls on you. And yet people are very afraid of the terrorism because we see all this news media, we see the carnage and all of that kind of stuff. We are really made afraid of it. In France, in the November 2015 attacks, they say that three times more people died in France that day of cancer than of terrorism. So what are our real risks? We're not good at evaluating what our real risks are. The people at Stanford University have been studying risk, and they've been using rats and have some really interesting studies where they have a couple of different levers that the rats can choose from, and one lever consistently gives a nice sweet treat, same amount every time, very consistent. Most rats really like that lever. The other lever doesn't usually give as much, but every once in a while it gives a huge amount. So you have a few rats that like that lever better. They're the gambling rats. But they've been able to, you know, go in and look at what neurons get stimulated as the rats are making decisions about these things, and even to stimulate some of the neurons so they can make the rats make different decisions. Really very interesting work. And one of the things that they've been able to find with all their different experiments is that rats, and they think that humans are like this too because we're a lot like rats, most rats are really not so much motivated by winning a bunch as they are motivated by not losing what they have. Most rats, like most humans, like most bonobos, like most songbirds, are more motivated to keep what they have than they are to gain more. And what that means is that we have an unrealistic push to hold on to what we have. Even if we don't really like it, we want to keep what we have. So most of us, the majority of us, need to be pushed a little more toward taking risk. Now, I'm not talking to those of you who are daredevils. You don't need to take any more risks. Because there are some people who, for whatever reason, just naturally don't have the same fear of losing things that others have. They are the ones who are more likely to become gamblers. So there are some people who don't need to take more risks. They're not afraid of losing. But those of us who are most afraid of losing may need to take a little bit more risk in our lives. So, I do actually have notes here.
You're doing great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How do we do that? How do we find a way to take more risks? Well, Tillich says it's through faith. Now, let me give you Tillich's definition of faith. He says that it's not so much about faith in a God, but it is a condition of being grasped by being itself. By being itself. And not with a capital B. So you have that sense of being that is so strong that despite despair, despite doubt, you still can move forward. So it's not a matter of denying the risks. It's a matter of seeing the reality of them, but also seeing the reality of the risks of the status quo, of continuing as we are. And that then can allow us to move forward. You know, when Chris made the comment about having kind of faith in this congregation, in these people, I think that's a form of that kind of faith, that feeling grasped by being that holds us and allows us to move forward. So we took some risks in this morning's service. We did some things very differently. And I think it was even kind of cool that the Sunday Services Committee Wednesday night decided to rearrange the chairs, because that like added a whole other dimension. You come in and you say, where am I going to sit? My usual chairs are where it's supposed to be. But I took this risk of speaking extemporaneously, which I don't do. I don't do this. A bunch of my colleagues about a year ago took a workshop on extemporaneous preaching, and I was like, no, that's not, I'm not doing that. I like a manuscript. I like to hone each word so it's just the right word, and get those nice long paragraphs of quotations from important people. And with this, all I could do is like maybe memorize a couple of definitions that Tillich gave us. But I have to rely more on my own ideas and my own understanding, and I have to get in a different relationship with the material. I have to think more about the format so that I can kind of remember what goes where and all of that kind of stuff. So it's a very different approach. It's not having this pulpit between me and you. And so that's a different kind of relationship. I mean, I think usually when I stand up there, I do pretty good with maintaining eye contact and that kind of stuff while I'm reading, but this is different. This is different. This is more immediate and more something. So I was looking at those risks and saying, what is the trade-off? I did a little evaluation and said, I know I'm losing some things. What is there to gain? And I think that's what we have to do as we analyze risk. And as we become a community of risk, we have to be aware of those of us who are more risk-averse, because they're the ones who can tell us, okay, what are the dangers? What might we have to give up? What might be a huge loss? And those of us, and I'm really one in this category, who is less risk-averse, probably because I've been pushing myself all my life to take risks. So we can